Okay, good morning, everybody. It's so wonderful to see everybody. Thank you for your patience. Let us learn. Today our topic is in the crash course of the Jewish life cycle is Sheva Brachos. We've all been there, we've all done them, and Be'ezra Hashem, let's try to deepen our appreciation of them for the ones we're going to do in the future. I want to take a moment, first of all, to thank our sponsors today, to thank Suri Stern, who is sponsoring the series, and today in particular, we're thinking about Suri Stern's grandmother. Where's Suri? Oh, there we are. Looking in the regular seat. Rebbetzin Florence Bogner's. How do you say that?
Bogner.
Fega Bas Eliyahu. She was born in the Bronx in 1915 at the age of 16, graduated Hunter College, was admitted to NYU Medical School, which in those days, for a woman and a Jewish woman to be accepted is remarkable. She became a bacteriologist and worked in the New York Blood Bank, was actually working at the time they were developing penicillin, and among many other things, being involved as a professional, was also taught in the Hebrew school of her husband's shul in the Bronx, and taught many, many young Jewish boys and girls. Passed away at 101 in the year 2016, leaving behind 4 children, 10 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren, and 20 great-great-grandchildren, all Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. That's quite something. So, Nishmasa Aiden. We also want to thank Ed and Sandy Carr, who are sponsoring, as we're coming up upon this is the second year of David Carr, David Tzvi Ben Yosef Yehuda Olav Hashalom, whose yahrzeit is shortly upcoming. It's upcoming this Wednesday. It was a much colder year on the day of his day of his patira, and a person whose love of Judaism was something which was very tangible to you when you were in his presence. And he may not have been able to see, but he saw much more than some of us do about what shul life means, what family life means, and Be'ezras Hashem, his neshama should have continued aliyah. Look forward to commemorating the day with you together. So let's jump straight in, folks. We're now left the wedding ceremony. Now we're talking about the 7 days of feasting, and the question is wow, that's a lot of time to feast. And where did this all come from? So actually, in Tanakh, there are two places where we find out about 7 days of feasting. And they're not both in ideal circumstances. The first of the times is where Yaakov Avinu is working 7 years. He's working for Rachel, and he ends up getting married, and there's no electricity in those days. And in Vayhi Bavokev Hineleah, and it's not the wife he's looking to get married to, it's her sister. And he comes to Lavan, and he says, "What is going on over here? How did this happen?" And Lavan has his own explanations. We get married in age order over here. It's a little bit of a veiled accusation about Yaakov Avinu taking the place of the older brother as well. But nonetheless, so he says, "You know what? We'll make this work. Finish this week, and then you'll be able to marry Rachel." And not to be confused, Shavua is 7 years. The 7 years of work, the second 7 years will come later. But Malay Shavua Zois, work for these leave these 7 days. And this is understood to be the 7 days of feasting. We learn a lot of halachas over here. We learn an important halacha which is called Ein Ma'arim Simcha V'Simcha. You don't mix two. They're not overlapping. Simchas, let the simcha of Leah and her marriage finish, and then let the wedding of Rachel begin. That's one place. The other place is actually in Sefer Shoftim, where it describes how Shimshon gets married, and his first marriage is not ideal. He comes to his parents and he says, "I found this wonderful girl from Gaza." And they say to him, "Bubala, are there no Jewish girls?" Right? She's Philistine. And he says, "No, she's Yashra Be'enai. I really like to marry her." And so off they go, and he gets married to this young lady. And it's a bad marriage from the start. I mean, like, let's be honest. It doesn't work when you cross cultures so easily. So he gets married, and there's all kinds of problems that happen at the beginning. And he says, he gives this riddle to his best men, or her, really comes from her village. All these guys, right? That were never really violence seems to be a thing that comes from Gaza, but nonetheless, he asks them a. a riddle. Vayemar lahem shinshon, achudu lachem chida, ima gei tagidu asadi shiva yamea mishteh, matzazim benosati lachem, shloshim sidinim, shloshim chalifas begadim. So he says, if you are able to unpack my riddle, I will give you 30 sets of clothes, because he's dealing with 30 people. If not, it'll be the other way around. You have to get me 30 sets of clothes. But he gives them the Shiva Simei Mishneh. And we know the end of the story. I mean, it's also not great, is that the people threaten his kala. So that to give the thing, she does spill the beans. Seems to be a problem in Shimshon's life in general. And then because of that, there's a revenge cycle. He goes and kills 30 people, gets their clothes, gives it to them, and it's a whole complication of, yeah. But Bain Taim, in description, he says, how long do you have? 7 days of the Mishteh as well. Notice both, interestingly enough, in both these cases, these are not, in fact, Jewish customs necessarily, right? Or it could be maybe he's importing them. We don't know if this is a Abrahamic tradition, which Av Yaakovin is importing. But Lavan is the one who seems to be suggesting it, right? Lavan is a little bit outside of that fold as well. Similarly, in Gaza, I don't know what the feasting practices were necessarily, but we do see this notion from very early on that people would celebrate for 7 days in the after a wedding ceremony. Whether it's universal, whether it's particular to Judaism early on, it's immaterial, because this has become the halacha. This is how we celebrate. We celebrate with 7 days as well. This is assuming, of course, first marriage for one of the spouses, whether it's him or her, then it's 7 days. If both of them, it's a second marriage, then it's more limited. It's 3 days. And if it's the person getting remarried to the person they got divorced from, then it's 1 day. So just in terms of setting up the setup of yes. So the question is: so what do you do in this case? What do you do in this? What's actually done? So feasting, we know how to do. Everybody likes to feast, but what else is involved? So, the Gemara in Ksubas has a very beautiful section. This is the main section. This is Ksubas Dav Ches. The Gemara tells us, yes, there's actually seven blessings which are said during these 7 days as well. So, seven of sevens does fit into other patterns in Judaism, right? We have Sriyas Omer. We have lots of seven of sevens. We have the Shemitah cycle. But nonetheless, so this is seven within seven. So that, the Gemara asks a simple question: Ma'am Mavarech, what do you bless? Am Rabbi Yehuda Baruch Atah Shalom Kenei Cholam. Shakol Barah Lichvada. Everything was created in your honor. The Yotzera Adam, and the Hashem created the human being. Vashir Yotzer Salam B'Salma B'Salam Dumus Tavin Sovi Yiskinah B'Menim B'Nyan Adiad. Baruch Atah Hashem Yotzer Adam. Hashem created the human being and created from him. From his form as eternal building, and again Yotzer Adam. So, and then Sostasis Sogela Karabu Kibbutz Bnei Basoach Avasimcha. This is the next one. Is that the barren city will now rejoice with her children as they return to her, and then Sameach Sazamech Reim Avim Kusamecha Yitzricha Baganim Medikanim Baruch Atah Hashem Sameach Chasam Nakalas. This is how you'll celebrate with your creator, like in the times of yore. And then finally, the longer one, which is Asher Bara Sasa Vesimcha Chasan Vekala Gilav Yirina Ditzav Chedva Ava Vach Vavishal Mariel. So I'm not going to ask her to sing it right now. But Meira Asher Vanakeni Yishama Bari Yadua Uchutzas Yerushalayim Kol Sasa Vekol Simcha Chasan Vekol Kala. So it's very, very beautiful. So just a few things over here is, number one is, you'll notice if you did the counting over here, there's only six brachas. So you're like, oh, wait a second, isn't this supposed to be the Sheva brachas? That's the name of the song. So of course, it has to be Borei Priya Geffen. So it always has to be the wine. And an important note over here is that the wine actually comes before the Sheva Brachos at the Chuppah, and it comes afterwards at the Sheva Brachos, the rest of the Sheva Brachos. It's always so confusing because I have these ridiculous cards, you know, which have the Sheva Brachos on them, and the cards are always labeled for the Sheva Brachos at the Sheva Brachos, but they're not labeled for the Chuppah. So when you get up there, it's like, okay, you're going to be saying bracha number seven, and then you're going to say bracha. It doesn't. The numbers just don't work. You know, it's like, and the most consequential time is under the chuppah, but it's always the wrong numbers because it's made for the other way around. But nonetheless, okay, I made my own cards because of this. This is ridiculous. I put my own cards because they have transliterations, because you never know, right? There's always, right? You got to. Pre-game this. Okay, nonetheless. So there is the Borei Priya Geffen, which makes a seven bracha. We'll get there in a second. It's interesting to notice that always wine always comes at this meridian in life, where there's an element of a physical relationship, but there's also something which is bigger. There's a spiritual calling within that relationship. At a bris milah, at a wedding, at Sheva Brachos, there's always wine is always present in the celebration itself. Notice, by the way, if you look at the rest, the six brachos, there's only two themes, and the two themes are. So the one, so Simcha always it does appear, but the one theme is actually there's two locations, perhaps if you want to put it that way. Location number one is Eden, right? And then the other location is Jerusalem, right? So there's two locations which are talked about. One is going back to Gan Eden, the other one is Yerushalayim bringing back her children as well, which is very, very fascinating. So just unpacking both of those a little bit. Oh yeah, in a certain sense, that's looking back and it's looking forward, right? He's referring to the future when there's going to be kibbutz galios. Akara refers to Yerushalayim as a barren woman seeing her children return back to her. This is a futuristic. We're looking to the future, which we're witnessing now happening as we're seeing. This is an amazing experience. But we also look back to Gan Eden. In a certain sense, marriage is sort of this bead along the line of life, right? Where there's we need to know where we came from and where we were going, and marriage is part of that continuum. Just to put things in perspective, it's also just in terms of thematically, it's worthwhile thinking about is that when Adam and Chava were in Gan Eden, there were only one human being on both sides of there. Was only one man and one woman. So part of the bracha over here is let it be that the two of you will only have eyes for each other. There's only two people in the entire world, and that's you and you. Now let that be the situation that we're saying the bracha for. Nonetheless, these are the brachas as well. It is interesting that the bracha number 7 actually has textual context, but it's in the negative. Listen to what's said over here. This is in Yirmiyahu Perek Lama Gimel, where it describes, Komar Hashem, so says God, Od yishama b'makom hazeh, asher atem omrim, Chorevu, you say this place is destroyed. So now Yirmiyahu is talking to the people who didn't listen to him after generations of trying to tell him it's coming, and they all ignored him, and perjury, and they put him in jail and the whole thing, and now it got destroyed like he said it would. And he says, you call this place destroyed? There's going to still come a place. You call it a place of me'ein adam and me'ein behemah. No human beings, no animals even residing here. Barei Yehuda b'chutzos Yerushalayim, in the cities of Judea, in the outskirts of Jerusalem, haneshamos, which are destroyed, me'ein adam, me'ein yoshev, me'ein behemah, not even animals here. Kol sasam, kol simcha, kol chasam, kol kala. So Yirmiyahu is giving this as a prophecy of nechama to those who see the destruction of Yerushalayim. In a certain sense, we're still in that camp. We're still listening to Yirmiyahu. And we incorporate his language into the blessing as well. But just understand that when we sing that song, Oy Yishama Bar Yehuda Chutzos Yerushalayim, it is a, so to speak, a manipulation of the words of Yirmiyahu. That's what the bracha is to make this marriage part of that process, which is what's said over here. By the way, whenever I tell people like a dividing up the brachas, like, you know, so it's always important to realize the brachas get longer as you go along, right? So you want to have the more proficient folks at the end. Right, end heavy. The folks who have trouble standing, the folks who have trouble saying, put them at the beginning. Right, so just in terms of planning things out as things go. There happens to be noticed that there are two brachas of Yotzer HaAdam. Do you notice that? If you look at the text, bracha. I mean, we're going to go according to Gemara's order, excluding what Bar Geffen. Right, but there's Hakol Barah Lichvodo, which is number one, and then Yotzer HaAdam, and then it goes. The second one, the third one is also Yotzer HaAdam. Do you notice that? They both end the same way. So number three is a more expanded version of number two, essentially. Right? So going back to Gan Eden. And so the Gemara actually points this out, and the Gemara notes this and says, Levi Ikla, Levi Rebbe Bilula, the very bottom page three, the Rebbe Shimon Bere. So Levi came to his son, Rebbe Shimon's Chasna, Bore Chamesh, and he said five blessings. That means to say, without the Geffen, there's only five, right? Rabbi Asi Ikla Levei Ravashi Behilula Demar Berei Baruch Shis. But he said six. So is it six blessings, or is it five blessings? Leima Bahai Kamifligi. So maybe they're arguing on this. Mar Savar Chad Yisira Havai V'Chad Savar Shtei Yisira Savai. Maybe they were arguing how many times was there a creation in a certain sense, meaning was the creation of man as a physical, as a masculine, and then a man, a woman, or there were two creations or one creation. The Gemara says, no, maybe perhaps. It was one creation. Was it the conceptualization or was it the actual creation? It says Hashem created the human being in his form. That is a stira between what and what? These are two different verses in Bereishis. Did he create them or did he create it or him? Right? So the Gemara then resolves, HaKetzal b'tchila ala b'machshava livrois shnaim v'lavasof nevroachad. Now there's one way of interpreting this is Hashem wanted there to be two beings, but Hashem created them fused, created them in a fused state, which means that the idea would be is that in physical structure together, separated to ultimate design, which is separate, and then in a certain sense, marriage is, so to speak, coming back to union, right? So there's this fluctuation between the concept of unique, creation as separate, division at creation, and reunion at marriage as well. So the marriage is, so to speak, reflecting these two yetziras, in a certain sense. So the yetzira Adam appears twice to reflect this as well. Bet most people didn't notice this when they were here listening to the Sharon Brachas, right? That there's two yes.
Are there any brachas considered more important than the other ones?
Oh, good question. So in people's mind, the more you have to say in life, the more important it seems, right? So it's not necessarily a Jewish concept. Siyag l'chach mashtika, right? Rather remain silent and seem a fool than open your mouth and remove any doubt, as Winston Churchill said. But nonetheless, it isn't necessarily that there's one more important than the other. Just it seems in our way of seeing things, it seems that...
That
scene is like, you know, such a, you know, the Eide Kiddushin, you know, who don't say anything, are much more important than the Bracha Acharit, let me tell you, right? Because without them, there's no marriage. So, you know, you can say Shira Rachas from today to tomorrow, but without that. But doesn't seem to be one more important than the other, although we see that two of them behave differently in a different halachic situations, right? So in different experimentations or settings, we'll see that two of them behave differently. We'll see in a second. But I don't think that means importance just because of what they are.
There's a quick idea. I heard the Reim Avuvim, parallel to what the Rav just said, that they were connected physically. It's also a male and female counterparts of the Neshama. Reim Avuvim, two parts of the Neshama, they were ready from Gan Eden.
Beautiful.
We're refining our soul.
Beautiful.
That's where the soulmate idea comes from.
Beautiful. So, by the way, so there's lots of show Rachas Torahs, and this is where we're getting into. Yeah, there's lots of things we can pick apart over here if we wanted to spend a little more time. We could notice that Mesameach Chasan Vekala, Mesameach Chasan Im Hakala. That's five and six or six and seven. They separate. They're different pronouns in terms of connections. Yes, Paul. Yeah. Good question. Okay, get that in a second. Okay, Bezra Hashem. Okay, so let's go first. The most important question about all the Shev Brachas is: do I need to have 7 days of Shev Brachas? That's the question. Do I need to have? So it's exhausting, and it's the travel, and it's expensive. And how does this work? So the truth is actually in Maseches Sofrim. Masechta Sofrim is like Masechta Katana. It's a brisa. So same speak as the Mishnah, but published a little bit later. And it's found at the end of, I believe, Seder and Ezekiel, you know, they published them at the end of Sanhedrin, right? They put the Katanas and it describes the 19th parak. It's actually brisa Yud Aleph, not Tes. It says Nagu Rabbi Senu Lemar Baboike Birkas Chasanim Birkas Avelim Al Hakoyis Basara Ubiponim Chadoshos Kol Shiva V'Chein BeErev. So it describes that they would have a minyan every morning, a minyan every evening. You can imagine it's pretty intense. And they would do a Berkas Chasanim, which is what we're referring to. Yeah, this is what called Berkas Chasanim, the blessing of the groom, every morning and every evening, which sounds like, from at least descriptively over here, this was something they did every day. And the question becomes in the Paskim is, does that mean to say that's prescriptive? That means that we should do it every day? Or is that they did it every day? Or is it they did it every day because they had a minyan? Right, and what happens if you don't have a minyan? Maybe do you have to go out of your way to see a minyan as well? In the times of the medieval commentators, so during the medieval times, the Maril talks about this. The Pesachet Shuvah quotes this. There's a Pesachet the Chasam Sofer talks about this, and they say that look, the people were very, very impoverished. People lived a very difficult life. It wasn't so simple. And so people would only do Shev Bracha number one. They would do the wedding and the first day, and that would be it, and maybe Shabbos. And that would be the way that people would do it. And that was simply because of the reality of the time. It seems today that people do, today it's come back to the description in the Maseches Sofrim where people try to do all the times. But if, let's say, it's difficult and it's not possible and there's no one to host and it's embarrassing and you have to go, you know, then it's not the end of the world if one of the days is a quiet day. But if there's the friends and the parents on the one side and the grandparents and the friends around on the block, and everybody wants to do something and people are asking to do it, and it's a beautiful thing. One should certainly aspire to being able to have 7 days of Shavuot brachos. But if it's not possible, then there's certainly what's called halachic precedent to so take the pedal off the foot off the pedal. It's not always possible. Yeah, Rosemary. You're right. It doesn't have to be so. It doesn't have to be so complicated. But nonetheless, let's not underestimate. Let's not underestimate the cost of these things as well. Eliezer.
We once had Shavuot brachos on the DAF
train. Oh, really? Now that train, that's wonderful.
On plane,
that must have been quite a Shavuot brachos. Specialty.
The idea that you need someone new. That
okay, we'll get that in a second. Yes.
Is it one a day or like on Shabbat?
They have the brides over here talks about breakfast and supper, right? And those are the days where we mean it probably means midday meal, which is breakfast, and then supper. So there were only 2 days in those days, there were meals in those days. So on Shabbos, people generally try to do all three. We'll see in a second why. But there are people who say like it's exhausting and like the short Shabboses. We just had one where somebody said we're not going to do sort of delicious, and everybody said, so it is all right. Nonetheless, so first of a few questions. Minyan required? The answer is yes. The Shulchan Aruch says you didn't do this. In fact, it's based on the Mishnah in Megillah. Most people learned this Mishnah, but it's just they don't know, pay attention to this piece. It says, "Ein poros na shma." You can't do like again the baruch at the end of davening. But in overin ifnei ateva, you can't go and daven in front of the amud. But in noisin es kapem, there's no birkas kohanim. But in korim b'torah, you can't do kriyas torah. But in maftirim b'navi, you can't do haftarah. But in oisim ma'amad u'moishav, this is the referring to when escorting the dead. Then Omrim Birkas Avelim uvetanchume Avelim. You can't say the bracha of Avelim and the consolation of Avelim. And Mizamnim b'shem pachus me'asara. And you can't do Birkas Chasani. I left out the most important one. And you can't do Birkas Chanim with less than 10. So this is something which is a davar shibik. It seems to have a notion of a davar shibik dusha. And therefore it requires 10 as well, which is why, by the way, if you look through the literature very carefully in Shulchan Aruch and all the poskim as well, they always talk about the idea of separation of genders in terms of sitting. Now, so perhaps in our communities this is less of a known factor, but they always talk about that people should sit separately. In fact, if you read the literature very carefully, it talks about different rooms. I don't think that, I've not seen that as the generally the common practice, but part of that is a little bit relating to this as well. This is treated as davar shibik dusha, which is well like a minyan. Is a minyan and it's separate. It also is, and the way that it's talked about in halacha is you can't say a bracha of shas simcha b'ma'ona when the yetzer is merakid beinenu, which means to say is that there has to be, we'll call it appropriate seating or appropriate. It shouldn't be in a way that everybody's joking with their wife's their friend's wife or their friend's husband, and that would not be the right type of simcha that we're aiming for as well. So just to putting that in there over here, because this is a reflection of this mission over here as well. Now, Moshe asks a very good question, which is having a new person. This actually comes back to the Gemara itself. The Gemara says, "Rav Ashi iklu levei Rav Kahana, yumachada barich kulo mikan va'elach iyekaponim chadoshus barich kulo v'iloi afushis simcha ba'almahu v'varashia simcha b'mona v'ashia bara." So then, in this case, the Rav Ashi says, if it was the first day, which refers to at the wedding itself, everything's great. You say that the brachas. Thereafter, you need to have a ponim chadoshus. If not, then you don't say it. Now, you don't say all the shavuot brachas at least. So you say, well, what's the point of this new person over here? Because like it's like so difficult, like your A list and your B list, right? It's like like all the people who didn't get invited to the wedding, we can invite them to show rockers because they're useful. Like so difficult, right? So what's it like to be that ponim chadashos? But it's actually a healthy thing, by the way, to be able to have that ability, not to spend all that money just because you feel bad, not right. It's important. I wish we could go back to the idea where I would just say this, is that this is an observation I made, is the degree of talking during the chuppah is directly correlated to two factors. Number one is how loud the sound system is. So the louder you make the sound, the louder people will speak. okay? Because they feel like they're being overridden anyway, so they're going to speak the whole time. That's always what happens. So the lower the volume, the lower the speaking volume. But number two is how big the wedding is. The bigger the wedding, the more speaking. And the reason is very simple. Is because you invited all these people because you felt bad not inviting them. But you didn't invite them because you have a very close connection to every single one of them, right? You invited them because it would be, how could I not? Because they invited me to, right? And so then that means to say that a significant amount of people over there aren't your bosom friends. They're the people you feel bad not having invited, which means to say that they're not really so invested in right what's going on right now, which is why they don't mind having a side conversation while this very special moment's happening. Just pointing this out, when the weddings are smaller, every single person is there because they watch this child, your daughter, your son grow up, and they love them dearly. They would definitely not speak during the wedding, except not if to say, her dress looks amazing, right? But but the point is that the bigger the wedding is, then the less connected, the more spheres of acquaintances we've included. But nonetheless, that's not what the topic is over here. But the point is, how many people are left over to be Ponim Chadoshos now? Right? That's the question. After all is said and done, if you have 800 people, then who do you have? So but nonetheless, why do we need this? So the Aruch HaShulchan actually, and I put it at the very bottom of the footnotes, but it's worthwhile knowing. He makes three suggestions. He says maybe because the people who are not at the chuppah have an obligation to hear the brachos. So, meaning to say, everybody else needs to hear these brachos. So now when there's a person who wasn't there, they're going to be hearing this. He said, that doesn't really make sense, because in a certain sense, the majority of the world in the city haven't heard this. Does that mean to say you need to go and, you know, sort of like, you know, a campaign, you know, with the chosen nekala from city to city to make sure everybody in the world who hasn't heard the brachos needs... That doesn't make sense, right? Where do you stop with that, if it relates to the obligation of the... So the Aruch HaShulchan says, that doesn't make so much sense. So he says, another observation, he says, he quotes from the Rambam, he says that that the responsibility is, everybody who's at the meal needs to give a bracha to the chasen and the kala. Everybody needs to say, I wish you a long life together, I wish you a happy life together, I wish you a life of transparency and honesty, and all the good things that we wish chasen and kalas. We should really, really all do that. So how do we do this? We can't all necessarily get up there and give a toast, although sometimes people do. So that being the case, what we do is we have representatives who do this, and they represent, so to speak, the crowds. Right, and there's a fixed text because, you know, what Anshek and Sadol did was the same kind of thing with davening. Before, I used to just sort of wake up in the morning and say, God, I love the smell of coffee and it's so good. And then that'll be my blessing. And then they said, no, we're going to give you a fixed text to how to do this. There's Bara Isha Kolniya Bidvara for this. And so to speak, they gave us the space to be able to do this correctly, right? So same thing over here. We have representatives. There's a more of a structure how to do this. And this is representing all the people who are there as well. So if that's the case, if it's the same crowd, in a certain sense, they've really done what they should have done. This crowd of 20 people were there. They gave their blessings, whether personally in their own words, or also representatively through the person who's saying the brachos on their behalf. But then in a certain sense, they're done. So now if you want to have more brachos, you need to have more people to be able to, so to speak, be represented or to be able to trigger that responsibility as well. As well. Now, by the way, just as a side of this, which shows you an important thing, is when you're invited to a Sheva Brachos, go up to the Chasen and Kala and give them a blessing. That's the point of the whole thing. Yes, we'll call it the fixed text version at the end of the bless of the Birkas HaMazon. But the point of why you're there is to give them a bracha. It's to share a pearl of your wisdom about your experience. And by the way, I hate those people who are always telling the jokes about marriage. Like, you know, like the guy that it's like, it's like, you know, when I wasn't married, I was half a man. Now that I'm married, I'm nothing. You know, I get all these like cynical jokes, and I'm like, please don't give me a commentary about the state of your marriage, right? Like, just let them enjoy their marriage and stop telling us about how woeful your experience has been, right? It's always this way that you have these wise cracks. No, give them a bracha. Give them a bracha. Look, go back to the innocence of what it's like to get married and think about that, what it relates to. So anyway, so nonetheless, but the Aruch HaShulchan says the third blessing. He says is what most people think is that a new person really gives a new perspective on the wedding, right? So you had all the people at the wedding, and it was a beautiful wedding, and now you have somebody who hadn't yet experienced it. So for them, this is really their experience of their being with this couple. And it's evident with them because they haven't had the chance to speak to them. They haven't had the chance to interact with them. And this is and that added simcha adds a dimension which is worthy of saying blessings. That's the third perspective, right? That energy they bring into the room is not, I'm coming because I'm the uncle and I have to go to traditions, right? No. If there's somebody else here, that energy energizes everybody else to remind you how special this day is. So just part is as well. How many new faces are needed is worthwhile noticing in the Ashkenazic tradition. One, but in the Sephardic tradition, they try to get two as well. Not always so possible as well. Coming back to Saul's question, yeah.
I just want to know, can the Jewish waiter, the Mashiach,
yeah, so that's the whole thing. So everybody pulls in that waiter, and then you're kind of like, how much simcha is that waiter adding? I guess it depends on the tip. So the question is, you know, it's not as easy here because most of the waiters are non-Jewish. But in Israel, this happens all the time, right? But the truth is, in Israel, they're also more happy for you, right? Meaning, say, like you pull in somebody from the next table, and you'll get more brachas from them than the regular cousins, right? So just they're so happy. In fact, I'll tell you a story that just happened a few weeks ago. There's a couple grew up in this shul, very very wonderful couple, and they. They hadn't had some time together as a couple away for 6 years. And so they went off to Mexico to a resort just to have like a weekend away. Very beautiful thing. And they're sitting down on Friday night, and it's like the kind of place, you know, you need to order the kosher food ahead of time and the whole thing. And as they're sitting down for the Friday night meal, in walk this, you know, young Israeli couple, you know, and they're looking around. They said, oh, is there a place you can get food? You know, this couple says to them, come, you eat with us. We ordered food. We'll share our food with us. We're with you. And they said, oh, that's so nice. And they say, you know, we just got married this week. I said, oh, this is going to be your Shabbos Sheva Brachas. You'll share it with us. And they're not background as well. They said, you know, it's your first Shabbos. Maybe you should say Eshet Chayil. Wow. And they pulled out, and line by line, he doesn't know the tune, but he said Eshet Chayil to his wife. They had their first meal. They call over a few people, make the Sheva Brachas, the first Sheva Brachas. Afterwards, the guy says, do you want to come out and smoke a cigar with me? So he said, no. He says, you know, it's Shabbos. We're not going to say, oh, okay. And they start walking back. It's a 5-minute walk to their room. And on the way back, he sees this guy running after him, and he says, what about your cigar? So he says, no, I told my wife, and she said, no, we should start our first Shabbat together. So just inviting somebody in. So you never know when you get a Sheva Brachas. It could be the plane, the train, you never know. Being kind is part of it. This is real. This happened actually 3 weeks ago. Robert, yeah.
Who qualifies to be somebody who has to come to
Good question. So that's Saul's point as well. Yeah, it's a good question. So there are poskim who say it's not talked about in Shulchan Aruch. There are poskim who say that because there's two requirements for Sheva Brachos to work. One is a minyan and one is panim chadashos. Maybe the two are linked, right? Which means to say is that therefore there needs to be somebody who qualifies for both. So it would make it more difficult. But there are other poskim who say it's not so simple. Panim chadash, if it's we're talking about, is adding the dimension of simcha. That everybody who's adding that. The only thing is then it does get into a question of bar mitzvah. This is the same question, is how old does a person need to be to qualify for the panim chadash as well? There's little, you know, Lally who's 2 years old. You know, that doesn't really make the cut as well. So this is a little bit of that debate is relates to this, and also relates to the reasons behind it as well. How does this relate to all the 7 days? The truth is that the wedding ceremony, you don't need a panim chadashos. That's very awkward. You're invited for benching. So, no. In the simcha hall, even if it's another day, right? So even if the wedding starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and by the time you're sitting down for the wedding, it's after night, that's fine. No panim chadashos required at all. Okay? But for the rest of the days, you do need a part of Chadashos if you're going to say the Sheva Brachos, except we're going to get to the sense Shabbos. But actually, here's the question as well. What if the person who is a Panim Chadashos was present at the Chuppah? At what point in time are you disqualified from being a Panim Chadashos, the new face? So the truth is the Shulchan Aruch actually talks about this, and the Shulchan Aruch brings two different opinions. We're Mekil, that if you came to the chuppah but you didn't sit down for the meal, you're still a panim chadoshos, and that's actually quite common. You'll have people who will come for the chuppah, they're only able to, it's a local chuppah, then they say, don't say I save a seat, or I'm in Avelus, whatever it is, and I'll come to the chuppah. That person is still going to be a Parim Chadoshos and will qualify to be able to say, to be able to warrant the brachas being said in their presence as well. And now, and here's a halacha which most people didn't know. Actually, Dobar Isaacs mentioned this to me. And she says, did you know this? And I did not know this. And I looked this up and it's very explicit. In fact, it's explicit in something I already read with you. Do you remember the Gemara says about the Parim Chadoshos? It says, if you don't know Parim Chadoshos, what the case of Rav Ashi, what did he say? He says you can only say Shasimcha Mamano, that's the Zimun, and he says be Asher Bara, which is the Ebra Gavin, which means that if there's no Panim Chadoshos or there's no Minyan, right? These are two things which are hard to orchestrate during the course of the Shav Brachos. Do I do Shav Brachos? The answer is somewhat. I can do a Zimun on the one, like I could do a Zimun on the mine anytime, and that's Ebra Gavin. And I can also say the last of the seven brachas, is Asher Bara Sosam Simcha. Not all seven. Asher Bara Sosam Simcha, in a certain sense, that's a global prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And it seems to be independent of the, so to speak, the particular Simcha as well. It's about weddings. Let this be paving the path towards, let's be a stepping stone towards Kibbutz Goliath to the end of the resolution. Did you know that? This is a really interesting halacha. This does not mean to say that I want you to use this as a cop-out. But if it is not possible, you just simply cannot find anybody you didn't invite, or at the wedding, or the minion fell through in the travel and the this and the that. You are able to do it in such a way. Beautiful. You should know this. You don't lose the share of rachas. You can do a zimun. You just need to have at least three men to do a zimun, and you're set when it comes to this as well. You can have three women as well if it's just women. Yes.
Can we use a woman for
part of the generally speaking, the practice has been with men, and that's because of it's seen as the Mishnah describes as davar shebikdusha, which is something which requires a minyan. So it's done in such a context. So that's what seems to be in the same way that a minyan would work in that way as well. Now Shabbos is somewhat different. So listen to this beautiful observation of the Tam Aminagim. He quotes this medrash which says Tam to Shabbos of Yom Tov Rishon v'Yasheni Havi Kaparim Chadashos Mishum Damrina v'Medrash Mizmor Shir Yom Shabbos Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Panim Chadashos Ba'u Lakan. So the medrash says that Shabbos itself is not time. Shabbos is an entity, right? And we talk about it in such a way, right? We talk about Shabbos Boy Kala. We talk about Shabbos as a woman. Actually, we talk about Shabbos as a man as well later on. Yismuchuvam. There's different ways of describing Shabbos, but Shabbos is seen as an entity in and of itself. In fact, if you go back to the Medrash more in detail, Medrash actually describes the following. It says that every day of creation had a partner, except for the sixth day. Everything in creation had a partner. There's 6 days of creation. So think about this for a second. Which days would you pair? Who's holding hands in this group? One and two, two and three and four, right? So it's not really that way, actually. The way the Midrash actually describes it is one and four, two and five, three and six. And you're like, how does that work? Think about this for a second. What that means to say is light and dark find context on day four when the moon and sun are created. The space, the heavens and the seas, which are separated on day two, find context when they are populated by aquatic and avian life. And day three, which is the creation of the earth, finds its expression in the creation of terrestrial creations on day six, right? So, of course, day one and four, two and five, three and six match, right? They're in a certain sense the purpose of each other or the context of each other. And then the Midrash goes on to say, but there was no match for Shabbos. So Hashem says, I'll give Shabbos to the nation of Israel. So in a certain sense, there's this union of this entity called Shabbos and the nation of Israel. In a certain sense, the context of how does Shabbos, what's the purpose of Shabbos if you're using the rest of the pairs, is the nation of Israel. And that extra energy is seen as a panim chadashas in and of itself, so it makes Shabbos much easier. And always Shabbos Shev Rochus is the focal point of the Shabbos, or Shev Rochus. So it makes it a lot easier not to have to worry about this particular point. There is a discussion about Seuda Shlishis. Is Seuda Shlishis a part of that same energy or not? And there's a debate about this, and we say that we can use it as long as there is a drasha, as long as there's special Torah which is told. In fact, some would say that it should be the chassan himself who should say something. So the couple should have something to say, and that would be part of that simcha as well. So if you've noticed in Shavuot Sheva Brachos, it's not just because you leave the best to last, but the reason why you may have seen that sometimes the groom or the bride will speak at the sort of shlishis, and not just because it's in the house and it's smaller and it's not, it is also part of this, which is deepening that idea of making sort of shlishis more meaningful as well.
We all have neshama yisera, so everyone is a parim chadashis on Shabbos.
That's very interesting. I never thought about that. Very good. So ourselves, we have an added dimension of self as well. Beautiful, Moish. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
That's good. That it's
wet. Somebody who stays for the meal that leaves before the benching?
Oh, no. So a person sits down. A person sits down and takes a seat. If you're going to take a French fry on the way out, it's not a problem.
If he sits down and, you know, some people leave before the...
The Panim Chadash should be there for the benching. Yeah, they need it. Yes. Sorry, I thought you were talking about the wedding service. Yes, they should be there as well. Now, what happens if we mix up the order? And this happens all the time. Like, all the time. In fact, Rabbi Talabalm used to be very good at noticing this. Like, I cannot tell you how many chubas butcher the order of the Sheva Brachos. Like, somebody up there is not getting it right. Which is why, when I made my cards, I also put them on one card. You can't mix up one card. You can mix up all the other cards, let me tell you. And it's most people are completely in autopilot or in screensaver for this, so nobody notices. Rabbi Talabalm would always notice when there was a mix-up of the order, and this happens literally all the time, is that people mix up the order, the Sheva Brachos and the Chuppah. So what happens if you mix up the order? So actually the halacha is it's not a problem as long as you insert the bracha you left out in the space. So let's say you leave out bracha number 3, and now you said bracha number 4 in its place, so you just now put 3 after 4, and you're all right. You can still say you don't have to go back and start again in the same order. With one exception, and that is Asher Yotzer Es Adam. Why? Because if you've already said Yotzer HaAdam, so let's say I'm going to do Bray Pera Geffen, and then I do, which is number 1, and now I do number 3 instead of number 2, by saying the end of that bracha, Yotzer HaAdam, remember it's the same ending of bracha number 2, once I've said that, I'm done. I can't do number 2 anymore, because I've already, in a certain sense, encapsulated number 2. So one has to be careful about that as well. Again, these are halachas you have to know on your feet, because you don't have so much time to prepare to answer this as well. So there's only 6 brachas, 6 brachas in that situation. Actually, it's easier. Usually there's less mistakes made at a Sheva Brachos itself. They're usually made at the chuppah. Why? Because at the Sheva Brachos, everybody's relaxed, right? And we have a bench, and the bench has them in order. It's under the chuppah, we have those stupid cards. And there's a lot of pressure, and the person who's usually organizing, if the rabbi's not proficient, is the party planner who has got other things on his mind. That's why he's got the earpiece, right? Rabbis should take care of the religious part of the ceremony. It's a big thing. I remember I was at a wedding. I'm sorry, I'm going a little diatribe here for a second. There was a wedding I was at, and it was a really complicated wedding. A very, 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 very complicated wedding. And there was a lot of acrimony between different parties. And when I do a wedding, I make sure to meet with all the parties, and I make sure that all the parents are in the room, and we're going to plan about how this is all going to work and who's going to... And there was this trigger happy party planner guy. He was like, he just had to show that he was in charge of everything, you know, that kind of person. He literally took away the cup from me when I'd planned which of the divorced parents was going to be giving the cup, because we'd gone through this, and he butchered the whole thing. But nonetheless, so you've got to be the party planners. I love party planners, but let them stick to party planning and let the rabbis do the religious part of the ceremony, okay? Because otherwise, there's going to be mistakes. Nonetheless, okay, I've got off my soapbox now, but it always leads to problems. Nonetheless, so yes.
The Sheva Brachos is a food of mitzvah.
Yes.
Would one have to have meat at a Sheva
Bracha? Good question. Give the people a break. I don't think it's necessary in that respect. At a wedding, yes. At a surah, let them make the lasagna. Let him make the lasagna. now, what else should the meal look like as well? So the one thing is actually, is the minhag to have light there? Now, technically speaking, light is fine. We have lots of light these days. Some people have the minhag specifically candles. See, in the Hasidic world, they'll put out candles. And that's when Yirmiyahu describes the disappearance of marriages because of the destruction. He says in Perak Chafei, "Va'avadi mehem kol sason kol simcha, kol chasan kol kala kol rechaim or aneri." Describes sort of society grinding to a halt, and matched with marriage is light as well. So light is important. It's important something to share Torah, not just jokes. And it's also important that every go over and give a bracha. Give your own bracha in your own words. That's what the Shavuachas is really about as well, as we discussed beforehand. Now, what's the business with the cup going around? It's like this, what is going on over here? So the truth is there's actually a debate in halacha as to how many cups you should have. Is it one cup or is it two cups? Ashkenazim have the tradition of having two cups. So how does this work? Let's just quickly go back to this. We all see this in our mental eye, in our mind, but how does it work? So the first thing that he said is that the person who does the zimun takes the first cup, as a regular zimun does. And the only thing that's irregular about this is that when they get to the end of the benching, as opposed to saying Borei Pirei Gefen, they wait. So that cup is set down. And then what happens is another cup is filled. And that second cup, which should be like the first cup, so should, if you're able to, it should be the same kind of cup. The second cup now has six brachos made on it. So that bracha, so each of these six cups, each of these, this cup is sent around to six different people who say the bracha. Then what happens is the person who said the benching, the zimun, now says the Borei Pirei Gefen as they would on the bracha on benching, which means I have two kosos shel bracha at this point in time, right? So I have two cups which have blessings. The one is the blessing of the benching and the Borei Pirei Gefen, which has got five brachas on it essentially. The other one is six brachas on it because of the remaining six of the Sheva brachas. So I want it to be that the chas and the kala are both going to be able to benefit, are going to drink this wine which had all the spirituality imbued in it. So I want them to both get from that. At the same time, the person who just said the Borei Pirei Gefen also needs to drink a Rov Kos because that's what they said the bracha on, the Borei Pirei Gefen. So how's that facilitated? So, all people have all kinds of ways of getting wine on the tablecloth, but the easiest way to do it is to have a third cup, to pour both into the third cup back into both of them, and for the Mavarik gets his piece of it, and now the Chazan and Kala are getting a mixture of both of the cups. So five blessings from the benching, because that's Berakas Mazin's four blessings and the Berak Berak Gefen, and then five and six brachas from the other one. So we talk about a lot of brachas over here, which are in these kosher shel bracha. If you're not germophobic, people like to say take a sip of the kosher shel bracha. Sfaradim are very into this as well. There's a lot to be said about cups which had blessings on them as well. And this is the mixing as well. Now, the benching is slightly different. You'll notice two things which are different about the benching. Number one is we add in this sentence, which is called Devei Haser. It's actually in Aramaic. So the way it reads is Devei Haser v'gam charon, v'oz ilayim b'shir yaron, nachenu b'magnei tzedek v'she'ei birkas b'nei aron. Now, notice, of course, the rhyme. Right, you have to be aware, just get a sense of the meter of this over here. It's meant to be like this. The translation is, banish sorrow and fury too, and then the mute will exult in song. Guide us the path of righteousness, heed the blessings of the children of Yeshurun and the sons of Aaron. So there's a certain element of sort of freedom, being liberated in marriage as well, which is being expressed over here. So a beautiful little poem which is added to the zimun. And then notice as well that we add another phrase, a two-word phrase into the zimun, which is Baruch Elokeinu she'asimcha b'me'onoi, that the celebration is in his place, v'she'achalnu mishaloi, and we ate of his, which is of God, which is what we usually say in the zimun as well. These are going to be omitted if there is no minyan or if there is no parim chadashas. There is a dispute as to whether or not you say Devei Haser, which has negative implications. Vagam Charon, Azileim Shir Yaron, the person who is mute. There's elements which are negative, which perhaps some people would omit on Shabbos, but they're different minhagim about this. You'll see different people do different things regarding Shabbos about the Devei Haser, which are whether it's added or not, but it will be omitted. It will be said in the case where you have the minyan and the Panim Chalashas as well. Another aspect over here is that you also say Shir Amalos, as opposed to al Naharas Bavel. Shir HaMalos is actually the secondary. Shir HaMalos is replacing the al Naharas Bavel. The minhag became before benching to talk about al Naharas Bavel. Shom Yoshavnu Gam Ochinu Bezachrenes Tzion Kuflam Zayin in Tehillim, and they said that's not really nice to say at happy occasions. So then on happy occasions we talk about Shir HaMalos. B'shuv Hashem Es Shivat Sinai Yunik Hacholim. Beautiful idea about the future. And Ozimar is Choyk Pinu V'Loshanen Rina. But that's only the replacement of al Naharas Bavel. What's funny today is that we've left al Naharas Bavel in the sand. And we only say Shir HaMalos, but this will be a bad time to say Shir HaMalos because of the happiness, even if it would be during the weekday as well. So a lot to think about over here, Bezra Hashem. The next time we're at Shir HaBrachos, we should be Bezra Hashem making them. But the next time we have the opportunity of celebrating Shir HaBrachos, hopefully it deepens our appreciation of this in an optimistic way, not a cynical way, because there's so much to be celebrated.